Well, hello everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Empower with Emma. I'm nearly like midway into season three, can you believe it? And this week on the pod, I have an amazing woman. Her story, her journey so far, and we really open up about, you know, how she's worked through finding enjoyment in her life, you know, depression in her 20s, navigating through that, living back with her parents, making a decision to go traveling in her 30s, not being afraid to actually feel her own fear and do something and try it. Like, amazing. She's a new book out called Underwater. It is the beautiful Claire Walsh. Well, welcome Claire Walsh to the pod. How are we today?
Gosh, I am just buzzing. I'll tell you that. I am.
Are you? And tell me, why are you buzzing?
I am buzzing because my book, Underwater, was published yesterday. Oh. So I'm 24 hours in and it's wild.
Like, how is the feedback? Because I saw even on your Instagram as well, like the people sharing it and buying it and then seeing it in bookstores.
The feedback has been incredible, and it's funny. Some people actually got their book a day early when they pre-ordered it. I was getting my nails done on Wednesday. And so basically I wasn't expecting anyone to have read it just yet. Yeah. I thought earliest it'll be the weekend before I hear some sort of feedback. So I'll, you know, prepare for that when it comes. So Wednesday I was getting my nails done and a text came in on my phone and I hit it. And it was from a good friend of mine. She said, "Oh my God, I'm at the bit when you're in Cartagena. This is incredible." And I said, "Oh my God, I wasn't prepared for that." And the girl who's doing my nails said, "What's wrong with you?" I said, someone's reading my book. And she said, "Is that not the point of it?" I'm going, I just wasn't prepared for that yet.
Yeah.
So that was the first kind of experience I had of someone reading my story. So yeah, bring it on.
And I'd say, like, the weird thing is as well, I'd say it's like you do want to put your story out there, and that's why you're writing a book, to touch someone's heart and make a message. But when you're like, oh God, shit, someone's gonna know all about me.
another one a little while ago, maybe one of the proof copies, you know, started talking about one of the guys that I was dating. It's like, oh my God, why Claire?
I know. But then you kind of have to, but it's like the chapter as well. We're going to get right into it. It's like the chapter of the fear. I loved that. I thought you described it really well. So we're going to get into it. So this is the synopsis of the pod today. So Claire has a book out, but there's a lot more to it as well. She's a free diver, was in the world championships. You're 40 now, are you?
I'm just turned 40. Well,
just turned 40. Yeah. So basically, like, the social norms, going out into her own experiences, you know, feeling her gut. Claire suffered with depression as well for a lot of her 20s. We're really going to dive into that today because it just shows you there is a light at the end of the tunnel when you channel that inner calling, that inner purpose, that inner longing, like, what do I want? And you listen to that inner voice and put, like, basically fuck the fear. And I think you really hit it home when I was looking at, you know, and I touched on it on my pod on episode 2 with one of the ladies, Becca Gillen, about the social norms. Like, we think, oh God, I need to be settling down now. I need to be having babies now. And then for you to be like, right, I'm going traveling and then I'm going to start free diving. I'm going to hold my breath and I'm just going to, like, see what happens. I was like, whoa, she's my kind of gal.
Yeah, damn right.
How did you get started? Like, for people who haven't got the book, because the book is only out, brand new. So how did you, like, get started on this journey? Where was that pivotal point for you where you were like, right, I actually can't do this anymore? I feel like, were you living a lie? Were you belonging to yourself? Like, where was that point?
So I've actually had a few of those points, but I think the book starts kind of towards the end of 2014. Yeah. So I was single. I was back living with mum and dad. I had been renting, and then over the few years leading up to that, I'd gotten that email. You know, the email that says, "Dear tenant, we're going to be moving back in, or we're going to sell the apartment. You have 28 days to get out."
Yeah.
Variation of that I had received several times. I was back with mum and dad in my childhood bedroom. I was working. My work, you know, I was working as a puppeteer, as a voice coach, choir director, movement facilitator, drama teacher. You know, I was doing loads and loads and loads of jobs. My background is quite eclectic, so I literally was grabbing any job that my qualifications would cover. So geographically, I was all over the place in you know, between Kildare, Wicklow and Dublin. But mentally, I was just as scattered. So in comparison, my friends were meeting their partners, buying their first house, going back to college on their second career. And here was I over here with the battered Ford Fiesta and a boot full of puppets and sheet music and travel mugs. You know, you can't help. But
I'd like to see a photo of that.
No, you really, really wouldn't, I promise you.
Did that boot of the car reflect your emotions?
It was dirty and grubby. So yes, probably. you know, like I just remember going to like engagement parties and sending congratulation cards. And the funny thing is, you know, so jealousy is a funny word because I think you can be genuinely very, very happy for someone and proud of them, proud for them, excited for them. And then what exists separately is that ache within yourself of, I am so far away from that.
What did that feel like? Like, what was the feelings that came up for you when you were like, was it disconnect? Like, what was it like?
Just, you know what? It kind of felt like I was falling backwards. Mm. I used to always like visualize this to-do list of things to do. So I need to have a career. I need to be financially stable. I need to be renting, you know, my own apartment. I need to be saving for a deposit. I need to be finding someone. I need to be. So all these like tick the boxes. Mm. I couldn't tick feckin' even one of them.
Mm.
So like, you know, you're setting yourself up this list of tasks or goals or achievements or accomplishments, whatever you want to call them. And when you can't tick any of them, invariably, you're going to feel like a failure.
Okay.
And that's what I did. And it's funny because I challenged myself now on that. Like a failure. A failure at what? A living?
Yeah.
You're living. You've already won. Congratulations.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do? But you can't help. So it is really about like what you set yourself up, what you view as success.
Mm.
You know, the book talks about, it starts off with me in that space and then going traveling. So why I went traveling.
Yeah.
So that was an effort to kind of go, right, I'm looking in this direction. I actually don't think I'm going to reach that goalpost ever.
Okay.
Switch directions because this clearly is not working for me and I'm feeling so fucking miserable and I'm fighting with myself the whole time. Yeah. I'm going to go a different direction.
Good for you. Like, and that's crazy because I think as well, and I think a lot of people, especially being a woman, I think there's a lot of pressure. It's like a certain age, a certain standard. Oh, are you not getting married yet? Like, even for me, I know my two sisters, right? They're engaged. Mm. And people know what I've been through. I went through here. Like, I had all the boxes, like had the house, trying for a baby, about to get married. And I was just like, and then when that all happened now, they don't even ask that question because they know I'm out there. And if they do, I'm like, seriously, come on. Now, my two sisters are happy in their relationships and that's their thing, but I'm not pressured by their thing. And that's their future, whatever, where I'm just like, I'd rather buy a camper van. Do you know that way?
I'm right. I might put that on my to-do list to Google.
To-do list. And that's the thing. Yeah. And then so changing your direction, I think that is amazing because I think a lot of people, we're at the crossroads, right? But society is always that way, left. But then the right is like, ooh, what's this? Like, what gave you, what was that point where you were like, oh, I'm going all in on plan B here?
Yeah, like So that checklist, I just didn't know how I could change any of those things. You know, it didn't look like my work situation was going to change anytime soon. Like I was back living with mom and dad, as I said, so renting was such a struggle. So yeah, I could put myself out there and try and meet someone, but I really began to thought like, if I don't, and you know, you get the platitudes of, Sherlock, he's out there for you. What's for you won't pass you. And all these platitudes that you just want to, they're so frustrating because they're so plentiful. And though they're well-intentioned, I just kind of started to think to myself, what if he's not? What if that's just not in my story? Am I always going to keep searching? So I will never, it just felt so beyond my control. So what I did have control over was my own life. I was determined to make a life that I would be proud of, that I would be proud to live in, to thrive in, whether I met someone or not, whether I own my own house or not, whether I had a strong career or not. I had to go and find things that satisfied me, that lit that fire in my belly. And I found once I started pursuing that road, things escalated, things kind of moved quite quickly. You kind of get taken with the current. It's really quite extraordinary.
Yeah. So then, like, from that decision, where did you start? So obviously you moved out of mom and dad's, and then you decided to go traveling.
I went traveling. So start of 2015. I headed off to South America, and that was the most amazing trip. Now, of course, heading off traveling, not working is the stuff of dreams for people, but this was kind of different. So I hadn't done any travel. I hadn't done much traveling in my 20s. I know a lot of people go interrailing Thailand here in Australia. I hadn't done that. So this was a real sense of kind of like a giddy freedom.
Oh, I like the sound of that.
Ooh, I'm out here. I'm on my own. I'm in my 30s, so I know a little bit better, or at least should. And I'm doing this on my own. There was such a sense of empowerment just in that alone. So, you know, I met some amazing people. Like the first group I met with, I describe it in the book, we went on a boat trip. We went on a boat trip from Panama to the San Blas Islands.
Wow.
It was an absolute and utter shit show.
Oh, really?
It was a shit show. They overbooked the boat.
Oh.
So you're thrown into a little double bed with random people. I shared this tiny little bunk with a statuesque German woman. She was fantastic. The captain was a really narky Argentinian who clearly just didn't want us on the boat at all. We got caught in a storm. Everyone was violently ill, and then they dropped us off hundreds of miles from where we were supposed to go. So we got off this boat absolutely stinking, run out of fresh water, and we hadn't eaten properly. Everyone was a little bit shaky, but my God, it was the most bonding experience.
Yeah.
So I met all these really, really cool people, and it was just so freeing to, like, you don't undergo a total personality, you know, transplant or anything, but there definitely was a lightness in me, a freedom to kind of explore. I keep on coming back to the word light, a lighter version of me, you know, a version of me that didn't maybe question myself as much or talk myself down as much. People genuinely seemed to like to be in my company. That was a real delight to discover.
Yeah. And the crazy thing is like, I think, well, a lot of us as well, like a woman in her 30s to be like, listen, fuck this. I'm packing in the job. I know I'm at home. But you were feeling your own fear and you were like, I need to go traveling to discover myself. And like to even do that itself, I'd say, like, what were people like? Were they like, what are you doing? Oh, like, how did you not let the like, you know, the people, the talking, the judgment, the negative stories, like, how did you get over that to be like, I have to do this for me? Like,
because each time in the book, when I hit that point, oh my God, I need to do something different, I kind of push through that fear, and that fear usually represents the imposter syndrome, actual people's opinions. But what motivated me always was, well, that'll be hard, but you know what's harder? Staying here.
Yeah.
Doing the exact same thing and staying stagnant.
Yeah.
Because the only way I'll go from here is down. This is not a way for me to live my life. So it's, you know, I'm a firm believer in what I call sitting in the shit. And it's kind of an antidote to, you know, positivity or toxic positivity, maybe. Yeah. So, And what I mean by sitting in the shit is, you know, if there is a situation that makes you feel a certain way, not necessarily lean into it or wallow in it, but experience it. Go, okay, hang on. Let's have a look what's happening here.
Yes.
Who's scared? Why? You feel sad. Why? And what can we do to change that? As opposed to totally denying those emotions. Yeah. Anytime I've done that, it has exploded.
Wow. In a good or a bad way?
Oh, in a bad way. Because what you resist persists. So if I don't give time to that, those feelings of whether it was, you know, inadequacy or fear, sadness, whatever it might have been, what, you know, take time, break them down. What's pinning those emotions? They come back louder and louder and louder each time. So that they're always my motivation. And actually, my best decisions have come from sitting in the shit. Because you sit there and you're going, you know what? I'm done. I'm done with being here. I am done. So now I need to usher these feelings on their way. They have had their time. I've heard what they need to tell me. And now I need to make the change.
Yeah, like you're not constantly, how to say, wallowing in it. And it's like, because I know, come here, we've all been there as well, even myself. It's nearly like you're playing the victim and you're like, pity me. And then one day you're like, hold on, I actually can create my own reality here. Like, I can actually make the change, not the other person. So why am I self-sabotaging, standing in my own way? Do you know that way? It's like, you know, you just get sick of yourself wallowing, like.
Yeah, exactly. And this is a sentence I've said a lot. Yeah. Oh God, I'm bored of myself at this stage.
Yeah. I'm like, I'm actually sick listening to you. And I think you said something. I actually put the book on it. You know, the fear. I'm going to get into the fear parks. I fucking love that. It was like, what was it? The fear page I actually put into it. And I think it was like, fear makes your world feel smaller. It manipulates you into making your world smaller, drawing your boundaries closer and closer to you, relying on rigid control to make sure you're operating well within the parameters of your comfort zone. I was like, girl, what? I was like, yeah, no, but it was so rife. Because when I read that, I was like, oh my God. I was like, because I was only saying on one of my pods there on episode one, I was kind of living in the shit for about three weeks. I was wallowing in it and I was like, what's going on? Now, I'd be quite spiritual and I do Reiki and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I was like, what's going on here? Like, you know, I've been doing a lot of healing, a lot of work on myself. And then I was literally like, point of the blame game, crying, just felt so shit. I just didn't feel myself. And then one day, like yourself, I was like, right, I need to do something today to make myself happy, to start to snap myself out of this mood, to just one step, just one little step to go, no, I've done that.
I love that. And that's like, it's a really recurring theme throughout the book of one small step.
One small step.
It's not going to change everything. In fact, it might not change anything tomorrow. But if you continue making those small steps, maybe next week. Maybe next month will be a better one. And I do think it is about little wins. And
big time.
Yeah, I only had a conversation with a close friend the other day, and they're having a rough time. I said, what are you going to do this evening for a little win? And he said, I'm going to go out and meet a friend for dinner.
Yeah.
No, my friend's having dinner. I'm going to drop in and say hello for 20 minutes. I said, brilliant. Text me on the way home. So he texts me. I said, fantastic little win. I said, oh, it doesn't feel like a win. And I just felt like, of course it fucking is.
Yeah.
Sometimes you brushing your teeth that morning, that's a win. Because there are days when you can't shower, when you can't brush your teeth.
Yeah.
You can't clean your bra and get out of your pajamas.
Yeah.
So you know what? I think we need to really look at the word win and what that is. So a win is competing in the world championships. They're the big glorious ones. But I've also had days when, like that, making myself beans on toast instead of ordering pizza. That's a win.
Yeah. And talk to me then, you just said as well, you know, brushing your teeth is a win. And like you were talking about depression as well. Like, so going from someone who had depression to really overcoming your fears, going traveling on your own, like how did you navigate that space as well? Like, obviously, you know, therapists, things like that as well. But looking back now, like, what, like, if you were looking back at yourself, like, what were those times like to even reflect now in this place you're in now?
It's funny because I don't consider it a past tense. It's something that I'll probably live with.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. My life.
Now, I have a shit ton more skills now.
Yes.
I have a far greater awareness, and that's brought about
yeah.
by, I'm talking like probably 15 to 20 years of reading, yeah, researching, talk therapy. It's doing the work, and the work is feckin' hard.
Yeah.
The work is gritty and it's sore and it's someone poking and prodding you, it feels like, a time. So yeah, definitely kind of late 20s, early 30s were the bad years. I call them the bad blurry years because I can't really decipher different events from one another. It's all this big merge. And it's funny, when I was writing that, I literally had to put a timeline in front of me going, all right, that was 2005. Was that 2007 or 2010? It is. But, you know, like, again, it, like I spoke about, you know, being happy for friends and wanting the same thing for yourself, I think things can coexist. And I know when people talk to me about their story or their emotions, I'm always just fascinated by, like, how complex it can be. So for me, like, you know, I find myself to be quite a playful, can be quite spontaneous. I have a natural sense of curiosity. I absolutely freak out when there's a big fat full moon in the sky.
Oh, girl.
I want to see it over water.
I can feel it.
Oh, Callum. My gosh.
My whole world just comes to a halt when the full moon's out. I'm like, I'm only short of being I was about to say a tiger, a wolf, and going, ow.
No, I do sometimes help.
Love it.
You know, like, I get up early to watch sunrises. So there is this side of me that's really in the moment, very taken each moment as it comes, feeling so feckin' grateful at the amount of beauty in the world. And that is genuine. It's coming from a real honest place. The flip side of that is the overthinker.
Yeah.
She's a bitch.
I love how you described that in one of the chapters. Oh, no. You're like, see you now. You need to stay up.
To cut me down every step of the feckin' way. But you know what? Like, I don't think that's something that just me experiences.
No.
And the reason why I do talk about mental illness so much in the book, well, it has been a huge part of my life and continues to be, or aspects of it continue to be, because back in let's say 15 years ago, so I was 25 and I was experiencing all these things, and my understanding of depression was kind of just a sadness.
Yeah.
I was experiencing this myriad of emotions, the thoughts I was having. I thought I was going crazy in the truest sense of the world.
Yeah.
So to lay it all down was really, it was like naming Voldemort. It was just calling it as it is. It was giving it power. But also, it's a little bit of a hope that someone out there who, if they're feeling isolated, that they're the only one who's going through this, there's a sense of relief and, oh my God, thank fuck, this isn't just me. This is just me. Because the sense of relief that comes with that is phenomenal.
Yeah, isn't it? And a big thing that I'm looking into as well. So obviously I'm on this, like, a healing journey. I feel like everyone's on a healing journey, but we don't really, like, label it as that, because we're always wanting to, like, grow ourselves, you know, be like, oh, I don't like the way I did that. I want to grow from that. Or, do you know what? That's kind of coming up. I need to see how I want to show up in my day. So even for me, I'm not too sure if I ever mentioned it on my pod, and even you saying it, and it's like we hide from the shadow part of ourselves. And you don't want to label it because everything's supposed to be perfect. Everything's supposed to be shiny. You're not supposed to talk about your emotions. Well, obviously, the last few years, that's totally changed now in our generation compared to our mothers, our fathers, our, you know, ancestors. But I remember, like, a time now, you know, I do think sometimes if you're not, like, everyone goes through some sort of, you know, whether it's a depression or a slump or whatever. And I even remember, I didn't even know what it was, Claire. I was living in Australia, and I remember, I think it was 2 weeks. And this, even when I reflect back now, I'm like, I didn't know what was wrong with me. I actually could not physically, I was after moving home from, sorry, I was in Ireland for a holiday and I came back the second time to Australia. But I actually, I didn't feel sad. Okay. When I was coming back, a little bit, but I was like, okay, new beginnings. I was about to move to Sydney. I was housebound for 2 weeks. I just physically, something came over me. It's like, I can't go outside. I just can't do that. And I just didn't know what I was. It was like this other version or something inside me was like, no, you need to sit put. And then I felt really a little bit sad. And then a day. And even my win, no joke, was having a shower and just making me food. But I didn't know what, but I was still, my mom was like, Emmy, I might have to go to the doctors. I don't know what's wrong or whatever. And I was like, I'm just going to ride it out. I just have to see, like, you know, and me even in my mid-20s, I just didn't know what the hell was going on. I was like, what is this? Why am I depressed? I'm going to have to come back to Australia. I'm getting sponsored. I'm doing this. And then I remember being in bed. My boyfriend at the time, he went out to work. I think it was about like 8 or 9 o'clock or whatever. And I started watching Breaking Bad, the new season was out, right?
Oh, this is
I watched 9 episodes and he came home from work and he was like, are you still in bed? And that's when I knew there was something wrong. Like, you know, that way, like it was really hard. And I wouldn't say I was like crying or anything. But I just was really low. And I was like, what the hell is this? But then only now looking back, I didn't know how to label that emotion. I didn't know what the hell was going on inside me. I just, now I know a few years later, I was like, that was some sort of depression. Like, but what was it for? And it's even undercovering that now. Like, I'm like, what was that? What was that? Like, what happened? Do you know that way? And I always say, like, you know, that book, The Body Keeps Score, like that happened for a reason, you know, that way. And yeah, even now I'm like, I'm only discovering parts of myself, like on this healing journey. I'm like, here we go again, jumping on that roller coaster. Let's do it. Oh yeah.
Buckle up. It's funny, you know, you're describing that experience and I'm just going, yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Like, it's so relatable.
Yeah.
You know, I don't even know if we have to be able to identify it as whatever, like a depressive episode or whatever it is. But I think there does need to be an awareness of, okay, what is happening here? Okay, I definitely cannot figure out the why right now.
Mm. So,
like, the why is almost too big.
And maybe way too big. Wait, I just didn't know. I was like, okay, so I just can't do that today. And nearly my own thing, because I wasn't on this journey yet, because I was only in my mid-20s. I only read like The Secret or whatever. I wasn't really, you know, self-aware. But I did know, I was like, what can I do today?
Yeah.
I can take a shower. I don't want to go outside. I still can't go outside. I can make myself food. I can brush my teeth. Exactly. Those things, those little tiny things. And I remember even, you know, I know people who have went through this as well. And I was like, if all you're going to do today is even go for a walk and have a shower, or lay in bed, have a cry, or even make yourself cereal, you're winning that life. You showed up for you.
Yeah. And like that, it, just as you said, it's small wins. It's small steps. And I think, you know, anyone who is doing the work, whatever the work might be, or healing, you know, and it's something that this is something I have to tell myself all the time, remind myself, if those small steps aren't taken with a fuckload of compassion,
yes,
there's no point. If you're doing those steps and going, Jesus fucking Christ, I should be, you know, batch cooking for the week, I should be getting started on a new project, well, then you're totally negating the work.
Yeah. Yeah.
You need to do those small steps and go, well fucking done. Yeah. Look at you. Like you would a child.
Yeah. You, yeah. You
child with such kindness and such celebration. I sometimes try and think of myself, you know, like my beloved nephews and if they showed me that they did something new, something that was tricky for them yesterday, I would feckin' jump up and down, I'd take a picture of them, and we would
you know,
and there needs to be that same almost purity of emotion towards that, the same compassion and the same kindness for where you're at.
And how do you show yourself compassion if you ever get yourself in? Because obviously, you know, like what you said as well, Claire, it doesn't go away. And I know people like this as well. They've suffered, you know, with their mental health as well. It's not like, I'll see you later, bye. You have to live with that. You have to learn to live with that. You have to learn to quieten that voice. But what do you do when that voice kind of comes up? Like, how do you, like, you know, navigate yourself?
That's a really good question. So firstly, I get this all the time. So, you know, it's March now, my book is out, I finished the manuscript before Christmas. I'm now married, I just got married.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I have a wonderful husband. And so anyway, so, you know, then we went to Egypt for January. Great, fab book coming out. So much to be excited about. February smacked me on the arse. Oh my God. I smacked me so hard on the arse, I fell over. Yeah. I just had such a moment of, what the fuck am I doing? What's next? You just wrote a book. Everyone's going to read it. People are going to read it. What if people think you are whatever? What if people think this? What if people think that?
The judgment.
You know, and it did. It sent me to bed. It sent me to bed for 2 days.
Mm.
2 full days. My husband is great. Booty is his name. Booty is super. And he kind of flagged it with me. I was in the sitting room and we were watching a TV show. And I said something, whatever along the lines of, for fuck's sake, I should really be working on my whatever it was. And I continued along this vein. And he said, Claire, can you just please stop? You're speaking about yourself so harshly. I actually don't like to hear those words about my wife. And that,
wow,
that really stuck with me. So Booty's not Irish, he's Egyptian. I think Irish people are so used to hearing self-deprecation.
Yeah.
Don't notice when it goes from humorous to actually self-flagellating.
Yeah.
Beating yourself up. And I had slipped very quickly into it. So that was the first kind of, when he said those words to me, that was a real flag of, okay, hang on, Claire. And I know you're a fan as well. I love Miriam and Jerry Hussey.
Oh,
love their work.
He was on my last one.
I know.
Yeah, loved. Like, he's just brilliant.
I actually,
two of them are amazing.
They are absolutely incredible. And the nuggets of wisdom are just super. So I actually took out notes I had from one of their soul space experiences and started to read through that. And one thing that came up is, you know, if you're feeling these feelings of discomfort, it's because you're doing something new.
Yeah. Yeah. And
it's funny, just framing it like that just made me feel suddenly excited. And suddenly we're going, okay, so yeah, there's lots of things to be afraid of here, but there's lots of things to be excited about.
I love that.
Yeah,
and you know what?
Framing, because it allows both to exist.
Yeah, and I can resonate with that thought. Like, even as well, you were bringing a story to my mind, and you know, something I've been feeling as well. So, like, I just recently moved in with my boyfriend. Okay. So a few years ago, like, the team went through awful heartbreak and stuff like that. So I lived with my sister for 3 years, and during COVID, great time. So I was in an apartment for a year, and I had some few bits still left over from the house that I lived in.
Yeah.
So like a little side table, lamps, you know, a few things. So then I was like, I'll bring them. What are we going to do? I was saying to my boyfriend, what are we going to do with the side table? He was like, all right. Like, I don't know. And all. And then I was saying it to my mom, and she made such the most powerful point. And obviously I'm on a journey of, you know, like, letting go. And even though I think I'm fine, sometimes the body does things and I'm like, oh God, I still need to, because you're always gonna, like, it's gonna take time, you know, of that old conditioned self. And my mom said to me, Emma, you need to totally let go of the past in order to make way for the future. And I went, oh my God, mom. I was like, and then when I sat back, I was like, this is the last hurdle of that extra little baggage that's going on, the bits that can remind you of the house that you lived in, you know. And I was like, you are so right. She goes, you can always buy new. You can always buy new. And I was like, I really held on to that, like what you said, Claire. And I went, that's the baggage. That is the baggage. And even though, Jesus, I'm so happy now with my partner, I love him. But you'll still have those wounds. And, you know, like I always say, trauma is a psychic wound. It can come back. It can itch it. It can scratch it. It can open again. You know, certain triggers, you know, yourself. And like you, it's living with it. It's grown from it. It gets smaller. It gets smaller as well, because when you've been hurt, it takes years. So I was like, oh my God, ma'am, you're so right. And then I think I went into this whole, I was like, oh, do you want the pots? I was like, get rid of the pots, the yeah. pans, the glass, everything must go. And you want to see the apartment was like, and people were like, oh, is that what you're moving? Like, it was probably the whole sitting room. I was like, no, that's just what's going. And they were like, oh. I think everybody got a slice of me. To be honest, but I actually felt, now don't get me wrong, I'm in his house now, so we're living together, he's away on holidays, so I'm like, if you're real alone, it's not my place. But then that's the discomfort of it all. I have to now get excited with the new, with buying the new, with doing the new, even though I'm like, huh?
What am I? But like, I think there, anyone listening will find remember some point in their life where they felt that it's so back in relationship.
I'm living in it, guys. We're both living in it.
And you know, your mom was
all the money.
She was tuning in what was going on for me, whether she knows me or not. that message of letting go, so powerful.
Yeah.
Similarly, in February, you know, the book is about to come out, and she's another author, in fact.
Yeah.
She said, how you feel? And I said, actually, I'm kind of struggling. I am struggling with this. It is really bizarre. And said, okay, so you've written it. Now you have to let it go.
Ooh.
You've done your part.
Yes.
You've written. You will turn up for interviews and whatever, and engage and be yourself. But you've told your story. Now help send it on its way.
Yeah.
Ooh. And you know, just as you were describing, leaving those pots, leave them behind. It is that sense of, you know, just like rubbing your hands. No, I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm done. Let it be. Off it goes. Let it go.
And you're so right, Claire, like, because I was literally like, when I was getting rid of it, like I sold, excuse me, I sold like, say, like little side tables. And I was like, but I love them. And I was like, I don't need them. I do not need them. They're not a like a need. They're like, you know, they're a want. And then something else. And then I like, there was other things. And I think my mom asked me, I was like, I have books there. I don't know what to do with them. She's like, how'd you feel about it? I go, no, I love them. She was like, there's your answer, Emma. You love them. So they're yours. So keep them. And I'm like, sure. My mom was nearly giving me a coach.
You've done a podcast with your mom, yeah.
I know. I should really do a podcast with her.
That's what, like, I'm definitely going to listen.
I know. Come here. She's really knowledgeable as well. I had her on a TikTok there the other day. But like, she's so young as well. Like, there's only 18 years between me and my mom. And the story she has, like, having me so young is like, I think that's why now we get along, because it's like woman to meet woman. And for me going through my own experiences, we've actually opened up and connected so much more as getting older. But yeah, she does have some words and I'm like,
whacking
out that spiritual little vibe.
Yeah,
I know, she's not spiritual at all now, you know. But I do think that, like, the old, she's like, you forget that I'm wiser than you. I'm like, oh, here we go. But yeah, like, you do, when you kind of have those moments, and you sometimes you just, like, you kind of go to, like, you know, I'd always like ring my mom or a certain friend. I'm like, I need to get perspective. Am I in my own head here? Like, what's the crack? Like, do you do that as well?
Yeah, oh my God. My cousin Lisa, we send each other voice notes, and they're our own mini podcasts.
Like, yeah.
9 minutes on there, I'm going to say. And it's funny, someone said, you know, oh, did you talk to Lisa about it? And now I have plenty of friends I would do this with. Lisa's the example coming into my head. I have friends who will tell me, Claire, get over yourself.
Yeah.
So it can be that, or it can mean, oh, for flip's sake, Claire, will you just be a little kinder with yourself? You know, so I do trust them to look from the outside in and kind of remind me what I know. And usually it's either, would you just get on up out of that? Go on, get over yourself. For example, you know, putting yourself forward as showing up on Instagram or social media. So there's that. And then there's also, you know, like, why would you say that about yourself?
Mm.
You are doing your best at the minute.
Yeah.
And it is really valuable to have those people in your life. I have my sisters, my brother, mum and dad, everyone, you know, give me little nuggets at different times.
Yeah.
They definitely, you know, oh my God, I get so caught up in my own head, and, you know, feelings can be very overwhelming. So it is great to have an outside opinion to just kind of nudge you in the direction you need to go.
Yeah. And talking about that as well, about you said about being in your own head. I love the part where you're not in your head. And you said when you immerse yourself into the water, it's like you hear nothing at all. No chatter, no judgment. I was like, wow, it's like this escapism from yourself. You are just getting under and you're free. I just was like, whoa, like, is that why you initially get into it? Is that what, like, you know, because you're going to have these scary moments when you're free diving, because, you know, yeah. If no one knows, like, Claire holds her breath, like, for how long?
5 minutes, 59 seconds.
Like, nearly 6 minutes holding your breath. Like, yeah. How did you even get into that? Like, as in, like, breath work, and, like, how did this journey just start for you to do that? Like, that's insane.
I did my first course in 2015, and when I came home, I thought I would just let it go.
Yeah.
Just like one of the cool things I did when I was traveling, and now I was back to real life.
But was it the diving course or a breathwork course?
As a diving course. Diving. So I would have done a lot of breathing techniques growing up, purely because I did speech and drama. I did a lot of voice work. I studied drama and acting in college. I was studying music. So, and then I worked as a puppeteer and a movement director. So, yeah. You know, support your voice with your breath, and engage your diaphragm or your core, and diaphragmatic breathing. All these phrases would have been really familiar to me and once I used in my own work. So when we started the course, you know, you learn different breathing techniques. So I was able to do quite a lot of them because I'd been practicing for a long time. But it's when you add, so the preparation to hold your breath is all about how you breathe, slowing the body down, switching from fight or flight to rest and digest. So you're switching the nervous system and slowing down thoughts, lowering your heart rate. So you're bringing yourself into that more calm, almost sleepy state of rest.
Wow.
So even, you know, when I'm talking about it, my voice slows.
Oh my God, I'm already like this. Sign me up if you're doing any breathwork courses. I'm like totally like lured into your hypnosis.
It is so, so very different. Mm. And when you're engaged in that, when you're paying attention to your breath, your breathing, the sounds, doing a body scan, what's happening in my left big toe? What does my elbow feel like? That's a technique I used all the time. Yeah. I found the thoughts coming in.
Mm.
I used to play a game called hot spot, cold spot. So hot spot, what part of my body can I feel really intensely right now? So I bring my attention, send my attention to that. So if I was in the water, I'd be holding on to a rope. So I'd imagine, I'd visualize the rope against my fingers. I'd feel the texture. I'm really up to that. And then the flip side was send your focus to somewhere in your body that you can't feel. So then I just have a bit of fun.
Yeah. Is this when you're diving?
This is before. This is
before the dive.
And I'm starting to just slow things down.
Yeah.
What does the inside of my right nostril feel like?
Yeah.
You know, firstly, it usually makes me laugh. But also it stops me thinking about what I'm about to do.
Mm.
It distracts me from nerves. And it brings me into the present moment. And it is a technique that I use all the time here being on land, here in my normal life.
Yeah.
So that kind of combined with breath work is a real big factor in preparing to free dive. That's something that I learned at the very beginning and something that continued all the way throughout my training, whether it is an instructor or a competitive free diver. That is the through line the whole way. Meditation, mindfulness.
Yeah. Wow. And like, one thing that I'm fascinated about, like, because I know you can hold your breath for basically nearly 6 minutes and you're gone. Is it 60 meters you can dive as well? You won the world championships. But like, how do you not, like, you know, knowing you have to hold your breath for that long, dive down, not get scared. Like, you know, how do you, like, going into something, be like, oh no, I can't. Like, because like, it's for me, I'm like, oh my God, that would literally overwhelm the shit out of me.
Yeah, like it is all about the preparation. Just to a small point. So I'm not actually a deep diver. I didn't win the world champions. I set some national records.
Yeah.
And I sound like I'm putting myself down, but I'm very real about
yeah.
who I am as a diver. But that doesn't take away from my achievements.
Mm-hmm.
My achievements were getting out of my own head, developing the skills not to feel scared, or maybe feel scared, listen to it, and then redirect. So, you know what you're talking about, how do you set about for the dive? That is a series of structures, disciplines that are done with kindness, compassion, and it's a phrase I use quite often in the book, meeting myself where I'm at. So what I mean by that is, I'm preparing for a dive. I don't feel well. I haven't slept, and maybe let's say it's the first day of my period.
Yeah.
So not feeling great. I have two ways I can go about that. So one, I can go, oh Jesus, oh maybe not today. Oh God, I'm starting to feel crampy. I'm actually so tired. This is no, not today. No, I don't. You know, this starts and your brain throwing in roadblocks that will prevent you moving forward. So then the other way is, okay, I think that's a cramp. How does that feel? All right. Well, if I have a cramp, what would happen if I wait another 15 seconds? Will the feeling change? You wait. No, it hasn't. Okay, so what happens if I send my attention to my breath? You know, so I'm trying to, it's almost like distract myself. It's acknowledging where I am. It's not trying to pretend I feel anything else, but it's acknowledging where I am and just playing the what if game. And I play this game so often in the book. What if? What if I sing a verse of Florence and the Machine in my head? You know, what if I, you know, all the time trying to trick or play games that will just keep me there in that moment, there feeling a little bit calmer and a little bit more accepting of where I'm at, if any of that makes sense.
Oh my God, yeah. Like, that's so powerful in itself. Like I said, because it sounds like to me you've really learn to, like, obviously, like, use your tools or what you have to navigate yourself. How do I feel? What's going on? What do I need to do today? How can I show up? Like, and that's like, you know, we don't learn that shit in school. Like, and I was like, imagine we learned this in school. And I know there's children that are learning mindfulness now in schools, but I was like, imagine if we got taught that stuff that we're only learning now. Like, oh my God, they'd be all like superhero alien avatars, like, you know, regulating themselves 24/7.
Honestly, that's the word that came to my head, superheroes.
Yeah.
Like, they would be an incredible little bunch of people. Yeah. And regulating, obviously, is a really, really important word there. Because, you know, we all have emotions. That is life. Mm. And actually, what's far worse than having emotions is not.
Yes.
Feeling numb.
Yes.
Feeling apathetic towards things. And, you know, if you don't feel sadness or anxiety or frustration, you also don't feel joy, happiness, peace. You know, it's recognizing that, you know, there is a spectrum of emotions and there are plenty of experiences that we'll have in this life that will bring us through all of them. I think Jenny Keane does a really great talk about moving through the emotion, to completion, feeling it and then moving through it and being finished with it, as opposed to getting stuck there. So regulating emotions is so, so important and a really big part of that.
Yeah, and the way you have to think of emotion is energy in motion.
Yeah.
So literally, it's just, you just need to move your energy differently. So I know, even like, let's say if you're not feeling the best or whatever, like even for me, if I'm in my own head, I just know, okay, I need to move this emotion. I need to do something. What does that look like for me? Am I going to go to the gym? Am I going to walk to the shop? Do I need to meet a friend? Like, make those decisions for yourself. Like, and I know sometimes you resist it and you sit there scrolling on your phone. You're only making yourself worse. We all know that. Like, come here, we're all culprits of it. We've all done it as well. But another thing I actually loved as well about the fear I'm going back to the fear because I just love this chapter so much. Fear is like a phoenix. It burns 1,000 times and still they will return, facing your fear. I was like, oh my God.
And you know what? That chapter was really important to me.
As well, yeah, as well.
Particular, because I think, or maybe just I always had this idea of once I sorted this out, I was done. Done.
Yeah.
Once I had moved out of my comfort zone, I was done. And then something else happens and you find yourself back at a place where, you know, you're doubting or whatever it is. So, you know, a really important realization for me is this is cyclical. This will happen again and again and again and again and again. You know, you can't really control that, I don't think.
Yeah. How
you
move.
It's entirely within your control. And that is the growth. You can't eliminate fear from your life. And again, that goes back to making your pulling your boundaries in, controlling everything. Then you are just limiting your experiences. You will feel fear and all its cousins again and again and again, but we are the ones that have the control of how we deal with it, how we channel it, how we challenge it, and more importantly, how we move through it.
Yeah, that's so special in itself, because I think as well, I think including myself, everyone listen, like fear is a horrible thing when it comes, like I think a lot of us live in fear as well. And there's main things that, like, obviously I think three fears that come to mind is judgment, failure, and success. Yeah. So the three of them. And we always want to do better. But for me, I remember I said it as well, like I was living in fear for a while. And I thought I was living in it. Like, oh, hey, how are you? Opening the door. No. I thought it was like, I wasn't living with fear or in fear. I actually was letting fear control me. And when my Reiki healer said it to me, she was like, Emma, she pulls tarot cards when she does Reiki as well, or like a card. I'm like, right, what's coming up today? And she was like, fear. She was like, you're letting that control. I was like, that's it. I was like, I'm actually letting my emotion control me and I'm not controlling my emotion. Now, come here. I know I'm a mindfulness teacher and a life coach, but I'm human as well. Hello. You know, that way, you know, these things do happen to me, guys, too. And I was like,
moment.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I was like, look at that. And then I was like, do you know what? I was like, get away. And he was like having that little chat with myself. I was like, see you. Get out. Oh, but I kind of had fun with it, like you were saying, like your values, like you were giddy, you were this. And then I was like, oh my God, I see you now, and I'm gonna leave you at the door because I don't want you living with me anymore. We're not housemates.
Yeah, seriously, unless you're gonna pay rent and you're not gonna, so go on,
yeah,
on your way. Like,
yeah,
it is like I said, it's always that light bulb moment, and you can be working on yourself, you can be self-aware and still get surprised every beckon time. And I think that's where that compassion comes back in, you know, not being sure about yourself. I should have known better. Should is such a good word. I should have known better. I should be doing better. I should. No, you didn't. It's okay. What can you do now?
That's amazing. And then, like, before we wrap up as well, I want to finish on, as I always do, because I just loved our conversation today, was, if you were to give advice to your younger self, what would it be and why?
Just feckin' try. Try it anyway. Try it anyway. Because everything that I thought of, wanted to do, I threw 10 million excuses at. The few times that I tried it anyway, my God, did it take me on a path that I never would have thought possible. So Claire Walsh, 30-year-old Claire Walsh, what I want you to do is try it anyway.
And look at you now, 40-year-old Claire Walsh. Free diver, book, just married. Oh, amazing. Amazing. Well, thank you so much for coming on today. And I absolutely loved our chat, our conversation, our pod. And for people wanting to follow you and get your book, tell me, where can they find it?
You can find my book in any bookshop, on the bookshelves right now. And you can find information about me at Claire Walsh Life, or my website, clairewalshlife.com. Drop by and say hello.
Amazing. Thank you. And I hope you have a gorgeous weekend.
You too. Thanks a million.
So that is it for today. I absolutely loved the pod there, chatting to Claire Walsh. We really touched on a lot of nuggets, even sharing my own story as well about what I've been through, whether it's, you know, little spurts of depression, which I actually have really dealt with, to be honest. But you have to learn to live with things. I think a lot of us try to brush it under the rug. Come here, even myself, I've learned. And, you know, Claire really gives some insights on how she navigates herself, how she shows up for herself. So I absolutely loved that and I really enjoyed it. Definitely read her book. It's brilliant. I've read it already. You can follow her as well. And please follow me at Empower with Emma and my Instagram, Emma Kyo. And like, follow, subscribe. Thank you so much and I'll see you next week.